Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
Beep boop 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 beep boop boop beep boop boop boop.
That's electronic music for y'all. This is the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude. I got Andy and Don with me. How you gentlemen doing? Andy?
Doing great, man. Doing great. Got my stack of punch cards here ready. I'm going to load them in my computer here. Get some music. It's a callback to all the 70s.
Oh, yes. Yes. My mom was a key punch operator. You had to you'd type on this thing, you'd punch holes in a card, you'd slip the card into the computer, it'd put light through it, and that's how it was reading your input. You couldn't type directly in.
You stack all your cards up, and then that would mean something in the end somehow.
Yeah. People need to know this stuff. Don,
what's up?
I'm programmed to say fine.
Okay.
Okay. Is that the Hamsters?
Oh, man.
I have no idea.
That is that's happy hardcore, guys. You need to be careful with that stuff. It'll rot your teeth out in 2 minutes.
So, indeed, Album Nerds Podcast time. We love albums, the album format, talking about them, sharing them, discussing them, and just reveling. So today we've got a great show for you. We're going to be talking about some electronic albums of the 2000s, and that's going to kind of be up for debate on what that definition is. So that'll be three of those. Don's going to be asking us a deep question. Then we're going to do some shout-outs to some album-related items we're digging, and then we're going to spin that wheel of musical discovery to find out what we're talking about next time. This week, let's groove.
That's what I'm talking about.
Electronic music refers to works that employ electronic musical instruments, circuitry-based music technology and software, or general-purpose electronics such as personal computers in its creation. Electronic innovation has found its way into rock and roll, R&B, jazz, hip-hop, and country, and many electronic-specific genres evolved over the years, including breakbeat, synth-pop, drum and bass, trance, dubstep, EDM, and techno. Electronic music had a strong presence in the first decade of the 2000s, including a significant increase in the popularity of EDM, which is electronic dance music. Today, each of us will present an electronic album from the first decade of this century.
Cool. Yeah. Of course, the first thing that came to mind when this topic came up was dance music is what I first thought about. But then as I did some research about electronic music, I was able to find some wiggle room in those other influenced subgenres. How did you guys do?
Yeah, this is maybe a little more broad than we initially thought. You know, I used to listen to this music quite a bit back in the early 2000s. So I brought back some old friends and I'll throw out a few and did find a few new ones as well. A few solely electronic comprised albums I mentioned here. Wagon Christ, Musipole. It's a really fun, just like bedroom DJ kind of sounding record, all sorts of clicks and boops.
Bedroom DJ, sure.
Well, the nice thing about electronic music is you can pretty much make it by yourself. You don't really need a lot of extra components to create it. That can be good and that can be bad. I mentioned a few more records here. Boards of Canada, they were doing some pretty interesting stuff and kind of more experimental psychedelic space. The record Gio Gatti from 2002, really fun, like sort of like trance sounding record from a group called Fuck Buttons. Terrible name. Kind of a fun record.
You know what? Why not go with, I think Buck Buttons would have been even a funnier name.
Well, it depends how you feel about buttons. I mean, maybe you'd really hate buttons.
Or one of them had a pet named Buttons that they were angry with.
Freaking Buttons. Get out of here. All right. And one last one. Dan Deacon, DJ and producer, listened to his 2009 record, Bromst, which was a lot of fun. Very innovative, creative record there from Dan Deacon. How about you, Don?
Well, listeners of the show are probably know that synth pop is a space that I enjoy.
It's in your blood.
Yes. Of course, a lot of my favorite synth pop acts from the 80s made records in the first decade of the 2000s. In particular, the Pet Shop Boys. I've mentioned them a lot lately. One of my favorite albums from them, Yes. came out in 2009. I think that album stands up against any of their 80s and 90s work. Another group that I haven't had a chance to explore before is this duo called Sparks. They've actually been around since like the early 1970s. And they've kind of redefined themselves over the years, but they did a kind of a techno-y album in 2000 called Balls.
Wow. Yeah, I've heard of them a little bit lately. They're interesting.
Yeah. They're weird. Yeah.
Yeah, so I panicked, basically, and I worked at a record store around this time, so I went for things I'd heard of, like Moby Play, which I found quite bland and long.
Yeah. Didn't have a lot of like special guests on it and stuff.
Yeah, like Gwen Stefani and things like that.
It was very popular. Very popular.
Yes, it was. It was very, very popular. That's why I knew it existed. And then Tricky. I tried a little trip hop blowback. It was, you know, there were moments that I enjoyed, but all in all, it was a little much for the old duder. And then I thought about some industrial type stuff, and this band Deadzy was quite boopy, bebop, boop, boop, boop in their songs. The album was Commencement. It was just really, really long, and they had a cover of Tom Sawyer by Rush on there. That was interesting.
Industrial Tom Sawyer. Interesting.
One other notable thing about Deadzy, Elijah Blue Allman. It's his band. He's the son of Cher and Greg Allman.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Okay. So before we get into our picks, why don't we hear from a listener in front of the show. He's an event promoter and organizer at a variety of New York clubs and a big fan of electronic music. Why don't we listen to his recommendation?
So my name is Drew. And that's spelled D-R-I-E-W. And yes, when you think of it backwards, it is weird. So I appreciate you guys having me on the podcast. EDM is definitely my favorite genre of music. The album and artist that I picked is Deadmau5. Deadmau5 got his name by actually finding a Deadmau5 in his computer. He is a DJ and producer. Thing is, a lot of DJs don't produce their own music, so having an album is really something that's unique to this world. The album that I picked is For Lack of a Better Name, that came out in 2009. It starts off with a track called FML. The beat, the drops, really the bass line are just unique and something that were very different at the time. They were this electro tech, and the sounds that he created were all sounds that no one had heard before. There's also a couple tracks that were hits like Ghost and Stuff, High Friend, Soma, and The 16th Hour, and also Strobe. Strobe was a big track. So a lot of these tracks are dance tracks, and these were really fun tracks, and I remember hearing them for the first time, and I was like, holy cow, this CD is amazing from start to finish. So this, For Lack of a Better Name, is something definitely to check out, and I would definitely check out Deadmau5 in the future. He has a lot more to bring.
Now, he makes a good point about how a lot of electronic music at this time period was more like DJ mix type stuff, which really is more just playing other people's music, as opposed to a handful of producers who are really creating music that's original. So I think that's a good distinction to create.
Yeah. Well, it's part of why it was a challenge when I started to find actual albums. Like, I was looking for electronic dance music albums. I didn't seem to find much. Some of what Drew said really did explain that. So that was helpful. Thanks. Okay, well, it's time for us to get into our album picks. Let's do it.
You choose me?
A lot of people that only know me now, like, have this vision of me as being very, like, with very on top of things, like, which is like, I was the worst disaster. Don't worry about it. Just make it. Like, stop overthinking it. Like, just make it and put it out.
All right. That was James Murphy from LCD Sound System. I'm going to be talking about their second studio album entitled Sound of Silver that came out back in March of 2007. So LCD Sound System is a five-piece dance punk rock electronica collective formed in Brooklyn, New York in the early 2000s. Came into a lot of notoriety pretty early on in their career, nominated for a few Grammys. This album in particular was nominated for Best Electronic Dance Album. We are going to play the lead single. This is North American Scum. But that I said, the more I do it, the better it gets. That's rock, rock, America.
Kind of sings like Jack White sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, much more musical than I expected. I'd heard of LCD Sound System, but just assumed it was stuff. So,
yeah, I mean, so they have an electronic component to their music, obviously, synthesizers and other electronics in the mix here. But they do have like live components too. I mean, there's like live drums and bass, etc. So, I mean, I think they walk that line pretty well. My clickbait headline for this album is LCD Sound System's album Sound of Silver Takes Gold in Best Made Album with Severe Bedhead Competition.
What's up with that guy's hair?
This guy's hair is like all over the place. Every interview I see of him, looks like he just woke up. Yeah, so I think this is a pretty polished up version of what their debut was trying to do. Yeah, their self-titled debut, a very lengthy double album, but at the time it was really exciting because it was mixing these elements of like punk rock and electronic and, you know, all these other influences. It was cool, it was exciting, but it felt very stretched out and maybe just didn't have a lot of really focused ideas. This album, I think, really takes his ideas and presents them in a much more polished up, digestible sort of way. And it feels like he's kind of really found his niche here on this record.
What really struck me listening to this is that taking electronic music, the next level of electronic music that was happening in the early 2000s and mixing it with these other genres is what pop music is now. It's just interesting how much this sounds like music that is being recorded now.
I'll buy that.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I think it was pretty influential at the time. And so all the records we're talking about today are like kind of like fusions of different genres kind of being mixed together here, which I think is a nice element of electronic music. It can really complement things well. When we play this, the next cut here is kind of like got an old synth pop feel. This is called Someone Great.
Yeah, I actually had like a visceral reaction to that sound. You know, it just takes me back to like the first two Depeche Mode albums.
Oh, in a good way. Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, don't you see his glow? I mean, the audience can't, but yeah, he's beaming.
Yeah, so that was, you know, really the first moment that you know, where I really started to enjoy this album. It's truly just like a synth pop song, but kind of an interesting subject. It you know, seems to be about loss, right? Somebody dying. And then, you know, on the fan boards or whatever, there's people suspect that it's about James Murphy's therapist. Which actually makes some sense, you know, lyrically, because they're talking about the conversations they had and stuff like that. But yeah, I really enjoyed that song, and that, you know, I think really helped me kind of get through the rest of the album. It's actually a pretty eclectic album, I'd say. You know, the first track is more what I expected, and then kind of gets a little funky in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get to the synth pop stuff, and then some songs just seem much more rock. But anyway, my clickbait headline is LCD Sound System Proves Worthy of DON Sound System. Oh, sorry. So,
oh, that spells your name.
Yes. Yeah.
You like it.
Exactly.
Are you bumping this in the house?
Yeah, I enjoyed this record a lot. I actually enjoyed it while running. You know, it was you know, it was good record for that. Actually, I think all these records were good for that. But it's not what I expected from Andy. I thought Andy was really going to challenge us with some real dance floor.
I do too.
Well, there's more episodes to come.
Yeah. So this certainly flirts with kind of that EDM stuff, but it doesn't go too far. You know, all the songs have a structure to them. They're all catchy and hooky. There's a lot of sounds like real instrumentation in there. So
yeah, I just expected a bunch of, you know,
but it does have that element. Yep. I mean, it's in there,
it
but
does.
It's mixed in.
But yeah, I'm very happy that I spent some time with this record.
I think that track there you picked out on Someone Great along with like really a lot of the tracks in the middle of the record there, along with that one, he does a great job of building the pace, or kind of like building some emotion out of these tracks over, they're pretty long tracks, 6, 7, 8 minutes long. I mean, one of the great things about dance music is you can kind of like build momentum and builds, you know, energy over the length of a good mix or a long song. I think they really capture that here in a way that felt pretty organic to me, which was kind of cool to have those two components, you know, in a nice mix.
They even make it clear at the end, you know, with that sort of traditional song about New York. I mean, these guys, I mean, they're musical, right? So this isn't just, you know, two guys with a computer.
Right. Yeah. James plays quite a few instruments. I think bass being his primary instrument of choice. But yeah, they all have, you know, background in playing actual instruments, not just clicking buttons. All right, why don't we play the most dance floor oriented track on the record? This is the opener, Get Innocuous.
Yeah, this is not my favorite track on the album. I picked it because this is what I expected the whole thing to be. I think there's some like Kraftwerk sample stuff in there. It sounds like what I expected. And then the record took off from there in a much more accessible, I guess, way that I didn't see coming.
Right.
And that song is a commentary on the search for authenticity in an artificial society. I think we hear a lot of that in music.
Mm-hmm.
But it delves into the anxieties and uncertainties of modern life and pretty much kind of reflect on your own pursuit of genuine experience in life. The clickbait headline that I chose to go with for this album is LCD's sound system picks up where Don left off with his Casio SK-1. Snarky synth punk lives. I believe that if Don were a musician, this is the kind of music he would be making. That's just what I felt when I was listening to it, because it had all, you know, the elements of the, you know, the synth pop stuff that he loves, but it also sort of had a sarcastic vibe, and it just seemed like what he would have tinkered on in as a bedroom DJ.
I picture myself, Ross on Friends. Remember his music?
That's,
I think that's more my style.
Always end with an explosion.
Okay.
The rest of the album, though, from moving on from that song, was inventive, poppy, emotive, with a sense of humor underneath. And to me, it kind of was like a techno Talking Heads. It had some of the same New York City feel, some of the same vibe to it. It doesn't sound like them. There's no African sounds mixed in. It's not quite as goofy in the vocal delivery, but it had an undercurrent of the Talking Heads to me. But I enjoyed the album, surprisingly. Like, it was a good listen.
Yeah, I mean, I think Talking Heads definitely are among their influences. These guys really wear their influences around their sleeves, I would say. They're not too shy about pulling from some, you know, previous group pretty closely, which can be good and bad, I think. But yeah, I think this record is their strongest overall, and it's the one I come back to the most. I'm looking for that kind of like cool New York City punk dance vibe, which I think they do really well. So if you're not familiar, check out LCD Sound System, Sound of Silver.
I'll put my shirt back on.
I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
If you're enjoying the show, and we hope you are, do us a solid and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app, maybe Spotify. Hopefully we made you laugh or you discovered an album you enjoy, so go ahead and leave us a review. It keeps the show going and helps other music fans find us.
There are guitars on the record, but they're definitely more in the background than they used to be.
We've always used synths and things on our songs, but yeah, they've definitely come to the forefront on this record.
All right, so my electronic album from the 2000s is from Editors, an album called In This Light and On This Evening, released in October 2009. It's actually the third studio album from the English rock band formed in Birmingham in 2002. They, on the album notes, they don't actually specify what instruments the band members play, but Tom Smith is the vocalist, Chris Urbanowitz, traditionally plays guitar, Russell Leach on bass, and Edward Lay on drums. But I guess maybe because it's an electronic album, I get the sense that maybe all of them were messing around on the keyboards and stuff.
Everybody pressed the buttons.
Exactly. It's a much more electronic album than their previous two efforts. Here's a cut called Bricks and Mortar. So again, you know, a very comfortable sound for me.
Yeah.
It sounds a lot like the 80s.
It's funny that this counts. I mean, it does. Yeah. It's electronic for sure, but my God, man, this couldn't be more Don-ish.
Right.
And the fact that it existed in 2009 is just shocking to me.
It was actually important because that was in that time period. I started kind of looking for new music to listen to. And this is one of the bands that I found. Oh. Actually, I even purchased the vinyl. I have that.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
So, real quick, were you familiar with their previous records before you heard this one? Or?
No, I don't remember how I became acquainted with it. But it was the first time I was kind of excited about a new artist for a long time.
Cool.
Anyway, my clickbait headline is English band channels English greats, but fails to capture Don's heart.
What? Aww.
I loved this record for a while. I was really into it. And I don't know. I kind of left it behind. And I mean, I still like it, but for some reason it's... I don't know. It doesn't have like staying power with me. I don't know. Yeah, you would think it would because it's everything I like.
yeah, but you know, it also could have something to do with the emotional and memory connections mm-hmm. that you built with it. You know, like you did with the music that inspired this.
Yeah, and I can't really put my finger on why you know this album you know kind of leaves me wanting. But anyway, well let's hear more. Here's a song called "You Don't Know Love."
You don't know love like you used to.
Yeah, this song gave me strong Don singing into a brush vibes. Like, both the LCD Sound System and this album, it was like, it's the just Don show
the Don
this
Fest.
Week.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry it leaves you wanting because this.
Maybe
this
it's
is,
just too on the nose. Maybe that's maybe. The problem.
Yeah, so the song probes the depths of change in human emotion. And it's, you know, it's about affection and detachment and all that kind of stuff. And it's pretty clear. I mean, the lyrics are pretty straightforward. I mean, when you don't know love like you used to, kind of from that Dracula singing style.
The Dracula school of music. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. The song is emotional just because of the chorus. I mean, the rest of the lyrics are cool too, but that chorus sets the entire tone very effectively. My clickbait headline for this album, editors found to be time travelers from 1982, moody synth pop lost in time. Dark London streets, anyone? Smith's Morrissey with synths, anyone? Like, it evokes that stuff so effectively that if you had played this for me and said it was from 1982, I would have believed you and thought, wow, really clean production for 1982.
It's true.
It just sounds so authentic to that time and that feel and that vibe. And lyrically, they pull it off. Musically, they pull it off. And the electronic elements are again, well woven into the fabric of it where it doesn't overwhelm. It's just the right amount where someone like me that ekes at too much electronic sound, this is a very nice mix. And I enjoyed it quite a bit. Quite surprised. The song "The Big Exit," I really like the sound of that one as well.
See, that one for me, I thought they got a little too dramatic on that track. It went a little bit into that campy zone for me.
Right, but that's kind of what makes it feel 80s to me is...
Yeah, right. That's
sort of very over the top.
Yeah, that's true. All
right, well, let's hear another. This is "Eat Raw Meat Equals Blood Drool."
Yeah, obviously.
Sure, yeah. Classic.
I give a little to you, I give a little to him, I give a little to her.
sounds a little Dave Matthews-y there, doesn't he?
I'm saying a little yeah.
So interesting song. I found that song pretty catchy immediately.
Yeah.
Lyrically, there's such odd phrasing in this album. I didn't really know what to make it. Lots of heavy metaphors, or just richly steeped in metaphors. Just odd, though. I don't know if it's like a British thing, the way he creates some wordings here. This feels strange to me, but I found it interesting. My clickbait headline is, "Editors edit themselves into another genre." I was vaguely familiar with this group. Their debut record was pretty well received from what I recall. That was much more guitar focused. This record is interesting because they really kind of abandoned that almost completely and go with this synth heavy sound. But you can still tell, like, they're good musicians and they play well together, and I think it works pretty well. Just maybe not quite as interesting to me as what they were doing in the past.
Okay. Yeah, I think for me, because of my expectations of what the show was going to be this week, I was delighted with everything that was picked because it was rooted in pop or rock music, and with electronica being a strong supporting cast member, but not all it was. So I think I probably have delusions of grandeur with these records because I was just so happy that it wasn't an hour of boop, 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 beep, beep. Stuff, you know.
Well, there was one kind of bebop boop component to this record that did stick out to me as maybe not being, I didn't love as much. There's like a drone sound throughout this record of varying pitch that kind of seems to fill in what the guitar distortion used to do for the band, just kind of like a background rumble.
Yeah.
And for me, like, that type of drone sound just doesn't have nearly as much emotion in it as, like, a guitar or distortion does, which feels more volatile, I guess, than just sort of, like, canned sort of version of that, which we get here.
I liked that sound because it sounded like London fog to me. Like, it set that dark streets tone, but...
Yeah, it does lit into the darkness.
Your point, it's a good point you're making. It might sound better if it were more organic.
Well, so the album is produced by Flood, who's another one who did, you know, my favorite Depeche Mode album and U2 and stuff. I think I decided why I am not in love with this record. I think it's because it's like AI just generated a Don album. I think it just doesn't challenge me, you know, and I guess I still, like, underneath, I still want to be challenged in some way, and I guess it doesn't. And that's probably not fair to them. Anyway, so that's that's Editors with In This Light and On This Evening.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
Now, Deep Questions by Don. All right, fellas, we're going really deep again this week. What were your favorite electronic devices in the early 2000s?
Yeah, we're going to be dating ourselves here pretty quickly. All right, we'll talk about my MP3 player, which is like probably from about 2002, I want to say. This is pre-iPod explosion. It wasn't really an option. So I'd gotten this like $300 MP3 player, which was 3 gigabytes, which, you know, nowadays could, like, you know, fit like on like a, you know, your thumbnail. But back then that was like an insane amount of space.
Yeah.
And sure it had a spinning hard drive in it, so you couldn't really jostle it around at all, or it would just stop working completely. The battery life was about maybe 30, 40 minutes, I would say. You could almost get through an album. So you pretty much had to have it plugged in. But I used that thing. I used the hell out of it. It was so great. It had a really nice line in, so you could do recordings onto it. And you could fit like maybe like 15, 20 hours of music on it, which at the time was like just mind-blowing. Right. You could have that much music with in your pocket. I mean,
right, not one of those giant folios with all your CDs.
that was the alternative, really. It was just carrying like 15 pounds of CDs with you. Yeah, I loved it. It was from Creative Arts. I don't know if they're even around anymore, but they used to be popular doing computer stuff. Yeah, so that was fun.
Dude?
Yeah, for me, I'd go back a little earlier because I didn't have a computer in the early 2000s. My roommate Don did. But I didn't have, like, the idea of ripping CDs and taking my MP3s and putting them on other, that just was beyond me at the time. And I worked at a record store, so physical media was still predominant with me. And CD Walkman with skip protection changed the game.
skip protection is huge.
That was one of the biggest problems with trying to have a portable CD player, which you would plug in to an adapter that would go into your cassette deck in your car. But every time you'd hit a bump or even turn, it would skip. So having the skip protection on the CD player, that was huge. It allowed me to put my folio of CDs in the car and be able to listen to them. So that and around, you know, around the same time I got my first cell phone, those, you know, one has become life, the cell phone, the mobile phone, mobile device, and CD Walkman are $3 on eBay, but it was cool at the time.
Well, I remembered I had a Palm Pilot. Do you guys remember those?
Sure.
I remember yours, and I just was like, what the hell is this thing for?
Yeah,
it was a little pen and everything.
Yeah, so it's kind of predated the BlackBerry and then the smartphone, but it had the little pen, and you had to learn like a version of shorthand.
Oh yeah, they had their own language.
So like instead of doing like a full letter, you would just do a couple of lines.
Right.
And, so there was like a learning curve with it, and off air, dude actually reminded me that I dropped it and the lid, you know, broke off of it and stuff. So it had it didn't last long for me. But
well, you were doing a promotion for the radio station you worked for, and you're running down the field at the sporting event, and it popped out of I saw it pop out of your pocket and hit the ground and break into pieces.
You didn't have one of those belt clips everybody had back then, where you just put it on like a
holster. It was probably in my giant cargo shorts.
That's what I was gonna say. Always with the shorts.
Very 2000s.
All right. What were your favorite electronic devices of the 2000s? Let us know on Instagram or Facebook, or leave a comment on our website, albumnerds.com.
Boy, that's just a straight shooter with upper management written all over him. Ooh, yeah.
So my electronic album choice is by a band that was originally called The Management, but due to conflicts with other bands, they had to change their name to MGMT, American sort of psychedelic rock band formed in 2002 by a couple of college freshmen, Andrew Van Weingarten and Ben Goldwasser. In 2007, they released their debut album, Oracular Spectacular, kind of a critical success, breakthrough album. Why don't we give a little listen to the first track, Time to Protect.
This song reminds me a lot of when the iPod came out. I feel like this was featured on some commercials, or just like I equate the two together.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, so I mean the album itself, just their sound is this catchy melodies, psychedelic influences, electronic elements, and it's a little more interesting than I thought. I just at the time wrote them off as a couple of rave kids. I saw the album cover that looked like they had just gotten done at Burning Man, and I never listened to any of their music until last week. The track Time to Pretend, I guess the keyboard melody was inspired by their pet praying mantis that was named Cuvilla. It was named after their experimental music professor who advised them on their senior project, which was music, which is what kind of turned into their whole thing.
Would have been cooler if this was the project, like this album.
A-plus.
The track was originally titled The Mantis Sailing Home, and was inspired by the tempo of ABBA's Dancing Queen. So, I guess a few years ago, it was in the trailer for the movie Spider-Man Homecoming and went viral on TikTok. So it still has some legs in life, and the band is just released an album. They're still doing their thing. Clickbait headline, MGMT take garage rock to the dance floor and lost their shirts along the way. As you'll see on the album cover. So why don't we listen to a little bit of, this is hard because it's got of. Why don't we dig a little deeper and listen to the next track of Moons, Birds, and Monsters.
Hard to connect what we just heard on the single there to that track.
Yeah.
Interesting, though, from my perspective. My clickbait headline is management lets workers have free reign on the B-side.
Mm.
Yeah, so they definitely packed all the hits in the front half here. And the B-side, I feel like there's kind of like had free reign and got into some interesting psychedelic space here at times. Mm-hmm. They still have like that pop sensibility. You hear a lot of like the Kinks and their songwriting here.
Yeah, there's definitely a garage rock undercurrent where this is like, you know, like in the 80s, synth pop kind of put synths on a punkier sort of sound. And then I feel like they did this with the garage rock revival of the early 2000s kind of turned into this, because it does have some Rolling Stones swagger to it. And there's some, especially on that second half, like you said, it's a little more straightforward psych rock.
Yeah, surprising. I think there's even some room for experimentation too. They get into some interesting moments here. Maybe they don't work perfectly. Songs like The Handshake, I didn't think was great. But you can definitely hear, you know, the production influences and a lot like Flaming Lips, I would say, especially the closing track, Future Reflections.
Shared a producer.
Yeah. Yeah, overall, I mean, I guess I'd like this more than I expected to. It's hard to deny that they can write a catchy hook and just have a good sense for, you know, writing a good pop hook. But yeah, it was cool to see that they, you know, maybe have roots in psychedelia and, you know, are open to some experimentation. So yeah, I was overall pretty pleased with this.
All right, why don't we get to the big one, the big track. It's called Kids.
So that is a catchy little ditty. You know, all their lyrics are kind of strange. I mean, I was reading some interpretations of it, and most people were kind of interpreting it literally, you know, like about sort of growing up and learning to moderate, you know, take only what you need. Mm-hmm. And actually, somebody compared it to a children's book or a children's story called The Giving Tree. Have you guys ever heard of that?
Of course.
Shel Silverstein, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you end up taking so much from the tree, eventually the tree dies. So I don't know if that's, you know, a family of trees haunting. I don't know if that's really a reference to The Giving Tree or not. It might be. I don't know. My clickbait headline is Oracular Spectacular. No, but it's pretty good.
I think we'd all agree there.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed the album, and I'll probably return to it. You know, I love kind of psychedelic, goofy music, and this is certainly that. But they have a great sense of melody, and they, you know, they borrow from a lot of areas. Even that like second song, Weekend Wars, it kind of reminded me of like Ziggy Stardust era Bowie. Yeah. I guess like all three of these albums, it's of its time, but it's certainly, you know, refers back to the past.
And they effectively used electronica to carry some of the melodies, to modernize the sound, and to, at this point, because of the way that popular music has moved, this stuff still sounds fairly modern. It doesn't sound dated because it's got such a mix of influences that are familiar to everyone that it feels comfortable.
Kind of shocks me with an electric feel. I read one review, and I just liked the one phrase. It was out of Rolling Stone. They called it synthesized heartache, which I think is a cool thing. And maybe that's like what I've always listened to, right? Is synthesized heartache.
Synthesized heartbreak. Yeah.
Anyway, it's a nice album.
If you haven't, or you just kind of forgot about them, or they used to be your jam, or whatever it takes, I think you should listen to this MGMT album. It's an interesting listen. There's something to grab onto for everyone. Yeah, MGMT, Oracular Spectacular.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Okay, fellas. Well, I guess we can unplug those synthesizers and you know, talk about some other things that we're digging. What are you digging, Andy?
Yeah, I got a couple. Couple things I'm digging here. It's instrumental music, actually. First one up from Julian. Is it Lange? Lange? Lange?
Lange.
I was thinking Lange.
Lange?
I like Lange.
It could be like Lange, like the, isn't there the yogurt that's spelled like Fage, but it's Faye?
Right. Yes.
Okay. First one up here is from Julian Lange. Record is called.
It's probably Lage.
Probably Lage.
Poor Julian.
The record is called Speak to Me. It's an instrumental guitar-based record. Found it pretty compelling. My first listen through, gotten back to it a couple times since.
That sounds pretty cool.
I like it.
So the whole album is instrumental? The
whole album's instrumental.
Okay. I'll check that out.
Gets much more bluesy on some songs.
I can freestyle over it.
Yes. Yeah. That's perfect for you. It's like a karaoke album for you to sing to.
Now I got one more for you to add your vocals to here, Don, from a last name you guys may recognize, Sean Ono Lennon. Ever heard of him?
No.
The album is called Asterisms. First time hearing his music. I would describe this as like instrumental sort of jam band quality to it. Very loose, only a handful of tracks, but a fairly long record. Enjoyed what I've heard from him so far.
So that sounds a little prog rocky. Is that the vibe throughout?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
All instrumental as well?
Pretty sure there's no vocals on that, yeah. All right, last one for me is from an artist by the name of More Mother. Her new album is entitled The Great Bella.
We talked about that on the show.
I think we may have talked about her a couple of years ago. Yeah.
Yes.
Very interesting, experimental, spoken word artist. Though she does do elements of like hip hop, I would say, occasionally as well. This album is very focused on like race relations, I would say, is the crux of this one.
Oh, yeah, now I'm remembering. Heavy duty stuff, even on the previous album.
It kind of sounds like something you would listen to like in a museum exhibit or something like that. Like,
yeah.
Just kind of playing
in the
background.
Or a documentary.
Yeah.
That's what my nightmares sound like.
Guilty.
Oh boy, what secrets are you hiding? Yeah. Yikes. Anyone in law enforcement, his name is Don.
Right. Well, I had the pleasure of seeing the legend John Mellencamp last week. I really enjoyed the show. In preparation for it, as I often do when I see artists, I like to immerse myself in their like latest work. So I went back. It's from last year, John Mellencamp's Orpheus Descending. We've kind of flirted with doing it on the show before. We may have even mentioned it, but we never have actually did. It's a solid record. His vocal delivery has changed a little bit over the years. He's much more gravelly.
Gravelly. But this album has a little bit more of the Heartland rock sound. A lot of his recent solo albums have not. They've been more folky or just very dark. So
can hardly even recognize his voice anymore.
Yeah. And it's super political, which I enjoyed.
Yeah, he's just a little more laid back vocally than he used to be as well. But aren't we all?
Still puts on a good show.
Cool. Awesome. All right. So I came across a surprise that I wasn't expecting. Looking at new releases, I happened to click on this band Mild Life, their album Chorus. They're an Australian jazz fusion band. And just some of it struck me as very 70s, but modern, jazzy. Just, I'd never heard of them. So a band to explore, a sound you just kind of sink into. So I found myself just kind of getting lost in it. And we'll have to see where that leads. But I didn't even know there were jazz fusion bands anymore.
Especially in Australia. That's cool.
Yeah. All right. So then back to my usual. Judas Priest's Invincible Shield album is fully released, and I don't know how Rob Halford sounds this good. He's in his 70s. The band sounds great. It's an hour and 4 minutes long. It's a long record, and there's some of the songs probably carry on longer than they need to, but it's still fist pumping good times. So
don't any of these guys have like arthritis or anything? I mean,
you get Mellencamp on the Halford voice program there.
On the Halford plan.
Yeah.
And then, as I like to do, I did pick up, actually, my wife bought it for me when we went to breakfast and the record store this weekend. It's an album I've loved for a long time. We've talked about it on the show, Patti Smith, Horses. And I had it on CD, but I did not have it on vinyl. So we picked up a copy, and it's been a lot of fun to have around.
Yeah, that's a good one. Did you say you had breakfast at the record store?
Well, there's a breakfast place directly next to the record store.
Oh, cool.
They share a wall. It's very convenient.
Nice.
Okay, well, what are you digging? Let us know. Hit us up on the socials, Facebook and Instagram, or on our website, albumnerds.com.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, boys and girls, it's about this time on the show when I'm reminded of the great American innovator and businessman, Mr. Steve Jobs.
One more thing.
That's right. One more thing. He said, "You can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. You have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in the future. You have to trust in something, your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever." With that in mind, let's bring out my friend and yours, Wadbot. See what we'll be listening to on next week's show.
In the 1980s, hip-hop began to establish itself as a musical movement to be reckoned with. MTV assisted by bringing rap and hip-hop into homes all over the world on the program, Yo MTV Raps. Next time, you will explore albums by artists that appeared on Yo MTV Raps.
Yo, MTV Raps.
Nice. I mean, I used to catch that when I could at friends' houses because we didn't have cable. I mean, Run DMC broke the door down, but Yo MTV Raps helped get hip-hop to the masses.
Into the living room.
Dr. Dre and Ed That's Lover. Right.
A different Dr. Dre. Yeah.
Wait, it was two Dr. Dre's?
What? Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Things to learn.
Yeah. Exploring probably, you know, hip-hop of the 80s and 90s. So, nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be fun. Don't forget, we do have one ongoing Album Nerds Hall of Fame vote in progress. There's 1 week left to vote for Meatloaf's Bat Outta Hell. If you think the album belongs in the Album Nerds Hall of Fame, sound off. Go to our website, albumnerds.com, or let us know on the socials at Album Nerds. Get that album in its rightful place in the Album Nerds Hall of Fame, or keep it out.
What's your favorite electronic record? What do you remember from Yo MTV Raps? What else are you listening to? Leave a comment on our website or email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Album Nerds. And please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so via PayPal at albumnerds.com/support.
Thank you for joining us once again here on the Album Nerds Podcast. We'll catch you next time with some classic hip-hop, Yo MTV Rap style.
Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next week.
I'm blue, da-ba-dee-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-dee-da-ba-da.
I was green. I was 65.